Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. It's been mentioned in previous programs that seniors in particular are among those who take multiple prescription medications. It's also true that in some cases, serious side effects can result. The September issue of Consumer Reports has done an in-depth reporting on the over-prescribing of medications, the consequences, and steps that the public and seniors in particular can take to determine if medication adjustments would be advantageous. The report, Too Many Meds, by Teresa Carr, begins with this. Americans are taking more prescription pills than ever before, and more than people in any other country. But that may be doing more harm than good. Follow our doctor-approved plan to discover how you can take fewer meds and feel better. If you're like most Americans, you probably start your day with a hot shower, a cup of coffee, and a handful of pills. More than half of us now regularly take a prescription medication, four on average, according to a new nationally representative Consumer Reports survey of 1,947 adults. Many in that group also take over-the-counter drugs as well as vitamins and other dietary supplements. It turns out Americans take more pills today than any other time in recent history, and far more than people in any other country. Much of that medication use is life-saving or at least life-improving, but a lot is not. The amount of harm stemming from inappropriate prescription medication is staggering. Almost 1 3/10 million people went to U.S. emergency rooms due to adverse drug effects in 2014. And about 124,000 people died from those events. That's according to estimates based on data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration. Other research suggests that up to half of those events were preventable. All of that bad medicine is costly, too. The U.S. spends an estimated $200 billion per year on the unnecessary and improper use of medication, for the drugs themselves and related medical costs, according to the market research firm IMS Institute for Healthcare Informatics. Our previous surveys have found that higher drug costs, including more expensive drugs and higher out-of-pocket costs, also strain household budgets, with many people telling us they had to cut back on groceries or delay paying other bills to pay for their prescriptions. The nation's expensive and harmful pill habit comes in several forms. Taking too many drugs. Nicole Lamber of Williamsburg, Virginia, says she became completely non-functional with pain, rashes, diarrhea, and anxiety from the adverse effects of several drugs, including some her doctor prescribed to treat side effects from her initial prescriptions. Taking drugs that aren't needed. Jeff Goring of Waukesha, Wisconsin, suffered a debilitating stroke shortly after he began taking testosterone, which his doctor prescribed for fatigue, even though the FDA hadn't approved it for that use, according to a lawsuit he's involved in. And taking drugs prematurely. Diane McKenzie from Alsip, Illinois, had regular bouts of diarrhea and vomiting, side effects she attributed to the drug metformin, which her doctor prescribed for prediabetes or borderline high blood sugar. But McKenzie found that losing weight controlled her blood sugar levels without drugs. Why would so many people take so many potentially harmful pills? Well, partly because while all drugs pose some risks, they are often essential, treating otherwise deadly or debilitating diseases, notes Andrew Polini, Director of Public Affairs for the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or PhRMA, a trade group. To be sure, some people, especially those who are uninsured or underinsured, don't get all of the care they need, including medication. Still, many Americans and their physicians have come to think that every symptom, every hint of disease requires a drug, says Vinay Prasad, MD and assistant professor of medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. The question is, where did people get that idea? They didn't invent it, he said. They were spoon-fed that notion by the culture that we are steeped in. It's a culture, say the experts we consulted, encouraged by intense marketing by drug companies and an increasingly harried healthcare system, that makes dashing off a prescription the easiest way to address a patient's concerns. To investigate this growing problem and to help you manage your drugs, we sought expert advice on how to work with doctors and pharmacists to analyze your drug regimen. We reviewed the drug list submitted by 20 Consumer Reports readers to see whether we could find problems and alerted them when we did. We also dispatched 10 secret shoppers to 45 drugstores across the U.S. to see how well pharmacists identify potentially problematic drug interactions. And last, we compiled a list of 12 conditions that are often first treated with drugs but usually don't need to be. A growing tide of risk. Nicole Lambert's problem started with a single prescription when, stressed in her first job as a physician's assistant, a physician colleague prescribed Xanax. I wasn't given any warning about anything at all. It was just presented as a safe drug, she said. Within a few months, Lambert, who is now 38, was depressed, even suicidal. It scared me, she remembers. Over the next 5 years, Lambert says she saw a series of doctors who prescribed more and more drugs. The ADHD medication Adderall to lift her mood and help her focus, another to counter the side effects of that drug, others to improve her appetite and help her sleep. And when her anxiety worsened, another sedative. The combination, she says, made her so ill she couldn't leave the house. I saw tons of specialists, she recalls, a gastroenterologist doctor for chronic diarrhea, an orthopedist and rheumatologist for joint pain, dermatologist for rashes. None of them questioned my list of meds. Lambert's story is hardly unique. The percentage of Americans taking more than 5 prescription drugs has nearly tripled in the past 20 years, according to the CDC. And in our survey, over a third of people 55 and older were taking that many drugs. 9% were taking more than 10. In some cases, multiple drugs are completely appropriate, said Michael Hochman, MD, of Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. But as the number of drugs piles up, so does the need for caution. The risk of adverse events increases exponentially after someone is on 4 or more medications, he says. That's especially true when multiple doctors are involved. Poor communication between providers often contributes to drug errors, said Michael Steinman, MD at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. And seeing more than one doctor is now the norm. 53% of those in our survey taking prescription drugs said they received them from 2 or more providers. Potentially harmful prescribing is all too common, said Stephen Chen, a pharmacist and doctorate from Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs at the University of Southern California School of Pharmacy, who worked with Consumer Reports to review the medication lists submitted by readers. Chen, like many pharmacists reviewing drugs, didn't have access to medical records. Of the 20 lists he reviewed, only 2 received a clean bill of health. Among the other 18, Chen identified 38 potential problems, half of which he considered serious. They included one person taking a combination of blood pressure drugs that could cause potassium levels to spike and trigger dangerous heartbeat abnormalities, and another's mix of blood thinner, pain reliever, and baby aspirin that could cause stomach bleeding. Identifying those kinds of risks and untangling potential harmful interactions can be difficult. For Lambert, it meant finding a doctor who was willing to help. Still, stopping the drugs was a long, nightmarish process, she says, because she had become physically dependent on them and it triggered painful withdrawal symptoms. Today, while some side effects linger, she says she feels lucky to be alive. The drugs and the withdrawal from them almost killed me, she says. Selling sickness. Jeff Goring, now 55, ran a busy deli and snow plowing business in 2009 when he says he started feeling more tired than usual. He decided to see a doctor who, he says, prescribed Androgel, a drug containing the male hormone testosterone. Goring says he didn't know then that testosterone drugs are approved by the FDA only for men with hypogonadism, or very low levels of testosterone, usually caused by infection, injury, or other health problems. He also says he wasn't warned that testosterone increases the risk of a heart attack or stroke, according to the FDA. After 4 days of applying the drug, Goring suffered a stroke, according to a lawsuit he is part of against AbbVie, Androgel's maker. He's one of more than 6,000 people nationwide suing six drug companies that make testosterone products, claiming that they suffered a heart attack, stroke, or other cardiovascular event after using one of the drugs. In a statement to Consumer Reports, AbbVie said the company believes our disease education and marketing of Androgel has adhered strictly to FDA-approved uses and emphasized that it's up to each physician to make sure that the drug is used for appropriate purposes. So why would Goring's doctor put him on a medication that may not have been indicated for his condition? For one thing, doctors can prescribe drugs for such off-label uses, even if the FDA hasn't reviewed the evidence and approved the drug for those purposes, explains Stephanie Cacomo, a spokeswoman for the agency. For another, about the time Goring started on testosterone, pharmaceutical companies began investing heavily in ads for the drugs and even came up with a catchy new name, Low T. Spending on ads rose quickly to $153 million in 2013, and companies got a lot of bang for their advertising buck. A March 2017 study in JAMA found that between 2009 and 2013, men exposed to more TV ads for testosterone, or low T, were much more likely to wind up on the drug. Those low T figures are a drop in the bucket. Total spending on drugs ad targeting consumers reached $6.4 billion last year, 64% more than in 2012, according to Kantar Media, a market research company. That's $1.3 billion more than the FDA's entire 2017 budget. Drug companies spend even more. $24 billion in 2012 alone on marketing just to doctors through ads in medical journals, face-to-face sales, free medication samples, and educational and promotional meetings, according to a report from Pew Charitable Trusts. Building relationships with healthcare providers and marketing medicines is valuable, says Polanyi, the spokesman for pharma, helping to ensure that healthcare professionals have the latest, most accurate, science-based information available regarding prescription medicines. But many drug safety experts worry that the practice also contributes to overmedication. Low T is a marketing term intended to sell testosterone as a kind of fountain of youth, said Stephen Woloshin, MD, a professor at the Dartmouth Institute of Health Policy and Clinical Practice. For most men, he says, testosterone declines naturally with age, and research shows that taking drugs to compensate for this has little or no benefit and some serious risks. That's something Goring wishes he had understood better. His stroke, he says, still impairs his short-term memory and has left one of his hands partially numb, forcing him to close his deli. Now, 8 years later, he's still trying to pay off hospital bills not covered by insurance. The rise of pre-disease diagnoses. 2 years ago, Diane McKenzie's doctor recommended metformin, or glucophage, to treat a blood sugar level that put her at the high end of normal, but still below the cutoff for diabetes. Concerned about developing the full-blown disease, McKenzie, then 44, agreed to take it. But almost immediately, she began to suffer from diarrhea and vomiting, known side effects. Her experience illustrates another trend that's putting more people on drugs, diagnosing them in the pre-disease stage of a condition. For example, identifying people with mild bone loss, osteopenia, or pre-osteoporosis, slightly elevated blood pressure, pre-hypertension, or as in McKenzie's case, pre-diabetes, a slightly elevated but still normal blood glucose reading. Catching disease early, of course, can be a good thing if it helps you address a problem before it leads to serious harm. But lowering the bar for what's considered normal can also get people on drugs before they need to be, said Alan Francis, MD, a professor emeritus at Duke University, who studies how the medical profession sometimes expands the definition of diseases. After treating people with drugs at the very early stage of a condition, often harms more people than it helps, Francis says. That's what McKenzie, a nurse practitioner, says she worried about when she began experiencing side effects. After a few months, they were so intolerable, she stopped taking metformin. Research actually supports that approach. A 2015 study in Lancet Diabetes Endocrinology found that for people with prediabetes, regular exercise plus a low-calorie, low-fat diet cut the incidence of developing type 2 diabetes by 27%. Metformin lowered it by only 18%. And the side effects of exercise and a healthy diet are other healthy benefits, not diarrhea and vomiting. McKenzie decided to make lifestyle changes to lower her blood sugar. Key to her success, she believes, is the stray puppy she adopted, who motivated her to take long daily walks, helping her to lose 70 pounds. Today, McKenzie's blood sugar levels are under control. Doctors who know when to say no. Ranit Mishori, MD, a professor of family medicine at George Washington University School of Medicine in Washington, D.C., made it her New Year's resolution this year to prescribe fewer drugs. She is part of a trend called de-prescribing, or focusing on keeping patients healthy by getting them off unnecessary drugs. In medical school, we're taught how to prescribe, not how to take people off drugs, she says. Another doctor who de-prescribes is Victoria Sweet, MD, who spent 20 years at a charity hospital in San Francisco with few high-tech resources but lots of time for patients. There's a big push in our country to practice medicine as if we're fixing machines with a broken part, said Sweet, author of a forthcoming book, Slow Medicine, The Way to Heal. Take a pill, fix the symptom, move on, she says. Slow medicine means taking time to get to the bottom of what's making people sick, including medications in some cases, and giving the body a chance to heal. And some medical organizations, such as the American College of Physicians, now advise doctors to try non-drug approaches first for certain conditions. For example, the ACP recommends usually treating back pain first with massage, spinal manipulation, or other non-drug options. But for the system to change, insurance needs to evolve too, said Cynthia Smith, MD and Vice President of Clinical Programs at the ACP. A patient's out-of-pocket costs are currently significantly less with medical therapy. than with non-drug options, she notes. We need to make it easier for both doctors and patients to do the right thing. Kicking the drug habit. Talk with your doctor about whether you might feel better on fewer pills. It's well worth the effort. Half of the people in our survey who take medication said they talked with a doctor about stopping a drug, and more than 70% said it worked. When extrapolated to all U.S. adults, we calculate that comes to nearly 45 million fewer prescriptions. Here are tips on how to cut back on unneeded meds. Don't cut back or stop taking a drug without first discussing it with your doctor. Have a comprehensive list of drugs to review with your doctor or pharmacist at least once per year. Give a family member and all of your health care providers a current list of your drugs. And consider non-drug options first for many common health problems. A note here, this special report and supporting materials were made possible by a grant from the State Attorney General Consumer and Prescriber Education Grant Program, funded by a multi-state settlement of consumer fraud claims regarding the marketing of the prescription drug Neurontin. And now, what older adults must know about RX risks. When it comes to risks from prescription drugs, seniors face triple jeopardy. They're more likely to take multiple meds and more susceptible to side effects due to physical changes that accompany aging. And they're at higher risk of drug interactions, partly because they tend to take more meds. In Consumer Reports' recent survey, for example, 40% of people ages 65 and older took 5 drugs or more, compared with just 17% of those 45 to 55. Compounding the problem is that older people are less likely than younger ones to ask a doctor about drug safety. Barely half of the seniors in our survey said they talked with their doctor about such concerns as drug side effects, but 2/3 of the younger adults did. It's not surprising, then, that older adults are twice as likely to suffer a side effect serious enough to require a trip to an ER and 7 times more likely to be hospitalized as a result, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. To reduce those risks, here are some questions to ask your physician. Is this drug safe for someone my age? The American Geriatric Society has identified dozens of medications that people 65 and older should almost always avoid because of the risk of serious side effects. They include anti-anxiety drugs, diazepam, Valium, alprolizam, Xanax, and sleep drugs such as Ambien and Lunesta. Will a lower dose work just as well? Because older people are more susceptible to medication, a lower dose may be as effective and pose less risk. For example, a study of more than 200,000 patients ages 70 and older on levothyroxine, Synthroid, to treat an underactive thyroid found that those taking lower doses were 2 to 3 times less likely to suffer a fracture, one of the drug's known risks, and our experts say a lower dose of the drug can work just as well for patients. Do I need to treat the problem so aggressively? Well, in some cases, it can make sense to treat conditions less aggressively as you age. For example, high doses of diabetes medication can make blood sugar levels drop dangerously low in older people. One study found that certain diabetes drugs were responsible for 23% of emergency hospitalizations for seniors. Recognizing that problem, guidelines from the American Geriatrics Society and the American Diabetes Association now say that otherwise healthy older adults with diabetes should talk with their doctor about aiming for an HbA1c, measure of long-term blood sugar levels, of 7.5 rather than 7, which is the goal for older adults. Similarly, new guidelines from the American College of Physicians says that low-risk people older than 60 should consider treating high blood pressure only if their systolic or upper reading is over 150, rather than 140, the traditional cutoff. Even then, our experts say if blood pressure is only moderately elevated, between 150 and 160, try several months of diet and lifestyle changes before resorting to medication. Is this prescription still necessary? Sometimes the potential benefit of a drug declines with age. For example, there is little evidence that cholesterol-lowering statins reduce the risk of heart problems in most people older than 70, and even less that they benefit people in their mid-80s and older. That makes the risks of the drugs, which include muscle pain and possible cognitive decline, of greater concern. For those reasons, the American College of Cardiology encourages older people to discuss with their doctor the limited benefits and potential risks of statins. It makes sense to have an honest discussion with your doctor about how your age and overall health affect your need for specific medication, said Michael Hochman, MD of the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. When someone's life expectancy is less than 10 years, he notes, we should reevaluate whether a medication's benefits outweigh the potential downsides on quality of life. Well, I believe it is important to emphasize that talking with your doctor or doctor is critical before any decrease in medication proceeds. I'm happy to report that within the last year, I've been able to, in conjunction with doctor discussions, reduce my dosage of a statin to lower cholesterol. In that case, a follow-up lab test indicated that that lower dose had been enough to maintain a healthy range of results. I suspect that being over 70 and doing my best to incorporate healthy diet and exercise, I work out 3 times a week and hike 1 a week, have helped. Well, there's a little bit more to that article, which I will tell you a little bit more about in a following program on silver threads, especially those drugs that are particularly harmful or have particularly harmful side effects for seniors. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.